All right, Tyler, thank you for joining me on the podcast. I appreciate you being here. I know we had some technical difficulties, but we made it.
That's right. And just the way it works out, you know, we were meant to be here. So I'm glad that we were able to work it all out.
Absolutely. So let's dive it right in. We'll start with the easy one. I was looking at your profile and I saw that you've done so many things. And I kind of want to hear, let's start from the beginning, you know, where you're from. Where did you grow up, and how are things like that?
Yeah, so my name's Tyler Witkowski. I am a Leland born and raised native, Leland, North Carolina, and which is about 15 minutes from Wilmington, North Carolina, 15 minutes from the coastline. So I was always a beach child, but we actually, me and my wife, who have been married for, 3.5 years now and been together for almost 9 years, we sold our house and moved into an RV full time back in May of 2023. And we are living life on the road now. It's been pretty exciting, but yeah, like you said, I'm a jack of all trades, master of none, but I think that's better than a master of one.
What made you guys make the decision to, sell your house and go on the road?
You know, we've always loved to travel. I've been a big traveler for as long as I can remember. We used to go to the mountains whenever I was a kid with my grandparents and my mom. And it was always such a fun time for me. It was during our summer break. And it was just memories like that that kept me going as a kid. And travel has just been something I've been passionate about. My wife and I, for the last 8 years, have gone to a different state every year for our anniversary, whether it's our dating anniversary or our wedding anniversary. And we decided that, you know, we wanted to travel full time. I came to my wife with this crazy idea. We had bought an RV to save money on hotels and Airbnbs and things like that. And I came to her with this idea after we bought it. And I said, hey, why don't we sell the house and move into this thing full time? And at first she was like, you're crazy. We're not doing that. And then, you know, I finally convinced her after about a week. I kept telling her about all the cool things we could do, how we could wake up in a different state every week and see a different scenery and meet all these new people and explore these breweries and these coffee shops and restaurants, local restaurants, and just be able to let loose and have freedom from the confines of everyday life. And she fell for it. And we decided to put our house on the market, put it on the market in March, and wound up having it sold within a week of having it on the market. Sold the house, moved out at the end of April, and have been full-timing since May.
Wow, congratulations on the 3 years, and it sounds like 8 years, you know, you've been all together, and that sounds fun. What's your favorite spot so far that you've been?
We've only traveled around North Carolina in the RV, but our favorite place to stay is Mayberry Campground or Lake Town Glamping in Lake Waccamaw, North Carolina. Mayberry is in Mount Airy, North Carolina, but we're also big fans of Fayetteville, West Virginia. That's just a place we've been to in our relationship, and we really loved it there. It was their nickname, the coolest small town in America, for a reason.
That's awesome. Well, me, myself, I'm from, you know, California, and I've never really been outside of the state and, you know, let alone, you know, North Carolina. Well, can you tell me what it was like, you know, growing up there and you know, how's life like there growing up?
Yeah, life was a little complicated growing up because I had to deal with a lot of bigotry in my life. You know, being in the South, Southern United States, there was a lot of bigotry and closed-mindedness, and I had to work out of that as I grew older because that's what I grew up hearing. You know, not necessarily from family or anything like that, but from people around me. And that was just the narrative that was preached to us in schools and churches and community events. And, you know, it was hard to overcome that. And I feel like it really set me back personally in my personal journey because I had to overcome those negative connotations that had been put in my mind and overcome these stereotypes that I had started to believe. And, you know, being able to overcome that after being raised that way for 20 plus years, you know, it was hard. But I think that's the hardest part about growing up in the South is having to overcome that as somebody who is more open-minded. I'm not saying that everybody's like that now. The times have definitely changed, and the city has grown from a small 500 people town to a over 15, probably over 10,000 now, actually. And it's just crazy the amount of growth we've seen over the past couple years. But
Wow.
I had to get out of there because, you know, just like it was my hometown, I wanted to get away. I didn't want to be the person who was stuck there in my hometown where I was raised my entire life. And, you know, it was at first it was by choice, and then it was more out of obligation to the people around me. And whenever it started to become an obligation, it really, that's when I realized I needed to get out of there.
Wow. That's crazy. I've had people being over here on the West, you hear a lot of things. We're extreme, the West is super liberal, blue state and all that stuff. People say, be wary when you go into the South. Still, is it still like that? Because I've heard rumors or stories from people that go and they're like, the people are so lovely, and I haven't really experienced, they haven't experienced that themselves. Is it just like scary stories, like that was like long, like the past, and now it's different now, like you said. What do you think your experience would be differently if, people were to go travel around there now?
Yeah, I feel like people can definitely see a difference. I mean, like I said, Mayberry, Mount Airy, North Carolina is one of my favorite places to go. And everybody there is so kind. They're so open. They're wonderful people. I love just going into the gas station because everybody will smile at you and say, hey. And, you know, that's what I love about Lake Town Glamping and Lake Waccamaw, North Carolina. You know, it's a very small town and everybody is friendly to each other. And there are definitely places that are still set back in the past, but I think that's anywhere. You're gonna find people who are bigots, and it's definitely changed. The state has definitely changed, and the entire American South has changed over the past couple of years. But there are still bad apples that cause these stereotypes and everything. But I can say, you know, back in the 90s, it was very real. It was still prevalent. And that's when I grew up, and that's the timeline that I was growing.
But like you said, I'm sure you can find that same, similar bigotry here in California in certain parts of the town. So yeah, you can really find that everywhere if you're trying to look. But I guess a lot of times people try to give other people the benefit of the doubt, right? Like
Yeah.
they're not always going to assume that you're, hateful and things like that. But it all depends on, where you grew up and what your past time was like. So tell me, you talked about, having to overcome a lot of obstacles in your journey. Can you give us a little glimpse of what your journey has been like, and what you kind of do now?
Yeah, I was undiagnosed bipolar and borderline personality and PTSD, anxiety, and depression until I was 21. And while I was going through college, you know, so between 18 to 20, 21 years old before my diagnosis, I had turned to drugs and alcohol to really to be the solution to my quote unquote problems that I was having. And so addiction was a very strong part of my journey. It taught me resilience. It taught me the power of the human soul to be able to overcome that. And with the help of friends, I've got a friend named Matt, and one night I had tried to commit suicide. I tried to overdose, and I called him and told him that night that I was going to commit suicide. And I hung up the phone, and he called me back 4 or 5 times, and I just completely ignored him. And then I got a random phone call from a number I didn't recognize, and I answered it, and it was Matt's dad, Mr. Tommy. And me and him talked for a little bit. He told me something that I will never forget. He told me that if your wrench isn't broken, keep on turning. And what he meant was his dad was a mechanic, so he spent a lot of time in the mechanic shop. And if he was having a hard time trying to break a bolt or, you know, break a lug nut or something like that, and he would go to his dad and say, hey, you know, I can't do this. His dad would say, no, you can. That wrench isn't broken, so you're going to keep on turning it until it breaks. And that just stuck with me because I was like, my wrench isn't broken yet. I'm still here. And from that day on, I sought help. I went out and went to therapy, went to psychiatry, and got on medication. And a few weeks later, after I finally, it took me about 6 months to get on the right medication combination that really helped me get functional. And I actually met my wife shortly after that, after I found that combination. And I told somebody that day, I said, you know, I'm going to marry this girl. And here we are, almost 9 years later, married.
Man, that's powerful. There's so much in that that you had to deal with. And, you know, that I think one of the key things, too, is finding that right combination. And so what is your mind like going through, like when you're trying to figure out, you know, what is going to be the best help for me? Like, are you just like, what's like a day to day kind of mentality or mindset that you're kind of going through that keeps you going and making sure that you're, you know, find the right combination to make sure you're healthy and your mind's right?
So I fight a lot for the people around me. You know, I see, I don't want to disappoint them. I don't want to make them, you know, sad or miss me. And I know that something happening to me would be devastating to them. So I take those extra precautions, taking my medicine and doing sensory therapy by relying on the senses, smell, touch, taste, hearing, all of that, being able to incorporate that into a daily routine so that I am grounding myself. And also, you know, taking time for me and my wife is so crucial for that because she is my safe person. She is the person that helps me through these dark times. And whenever my mind gets the best of me, she's the one who snaps me out of it. I kind of split the voices in my head that whenever I start to, you know, have to get onto an extra medication, some kind of booster or something like that, I start to get this fog about my mind. And I, you know, have these doubtful thoughts, this imposter syndrome. And I've nicknamed those voices Kyle. And I just have to take a step back and tell Kyle to shut up. You know, I naming it and giving it a name and a persona has been very important for me because it makes it like it's not me, it's somebody else. Instead of, you know, me believing these things, it's somebody else that believes these things that I don't believe these things.
Wow, that's awesome. That's funny that you nicknamed these because I think a lot of times, one time when I was meeting with like a coach or someone coaching me and like my goals and my mindset, and she has a psychology degree, and so when we first started, she's like, you know, give every one of those voices in your head, like either like I'm not good enough, or I can't do these things, or procrastination, or you know, unmotivation, like naming these things, or giving them a visual cue or something that where you're able to visualize. And you know, just like you said, tell it to shut up or move it aside or realize that that's not you that's speaking, really. That's, you know, that's the different kind of voice that's in your head. And that brings me to this this book that I just started reading. It's called The Alter Ego Effect. And it's kind of reverses. It's a gentleman that helped Kobe Bryant develop the Mamba mindset, the Mamba mentality. So he literally created an alter ego of himself, of the Mamba. This is what the Mamba does. He works out 3 times a day. He practices for hours. When people go home, he's still going. And he's working out and he's doing the things that making him even more of a, I guess, goat or professional. You know, what separates him from most of the average people is that alter ego of, no, nah, this is not me. This is not Kobe. This is the Mamba that's taking over and, you know, really killing it and stuff like that. So it's crazy how our minds can do kind of both sides of the coin. Is one, it can bring you down. And then the other thing, it can also lift you up by, you know, giving yourself a different type of personality or mindset, which is really powerful. I didn't want to go on a rant, but it was so powerful what you said on that, that it made me stop and think. But that also brought me to my other question is, you know, how did you go about and meet your wife And what were things like when you going through your mind, you know, when you're going through a tough situation and meeting someone like that, you know, what was going through your mind and how did that work out?
So I have met my wife at a Applebee's in Leland, North Carolina, where we both worked. I was the lead server and she was a new hostess. I was going into management the day after we met. So it was a very tricky situation, but I fell for her as soon as I saw her. I walked into the Applebee's, into the side door, and I looked over and she was standing there filling out her new hire paperwork. I reached up, felt my pulse, and I was like, I swear I died, went to heaven because I just saw an angel. And, you know, I went up to her and I just introduced myself and we started chatting throughout the night. We exchanged numbers and unfortunately she had a boyfriend, so I had to wait. But I waited for a couple of weeks and, you know, they wound up splitting up and I asked her to, you know, go on a date with me and be mine. And now here we are, you know, it's been a journey. We've been through our ups and downs, through the ringer, but you know, we lived in a long distance relationship for the first 4 years of our relationship. It was, we lived four and a half hours away from each other. So, you know, with my mental illness and my past, there was a lot of insecurities on my part, and we had to overcome that as well. And I have to say she was amazing through all of it, understanding what I was going, not necessarily understanding, but being understanding of what I was going through and, you know, conscious of my past. She made the effort to make sure I was at ease and, you know, she's done so many great things for me. She helped me start the publishing company that we own, Tea with Coffee Media. She's been a driving force behind that. She works behind the scenes, but she's definitely pushes me forward and makes sure I don't give up on the goals and dreams. She's the dream, man.
Wow, man. That's congrats again. That's awesome. I also want to talk about, you kind of mentioned it briefly, so publishing company. So you started doing a couple of things these last few years, I believe. So can you kind of go into that, you know, what you guys started, what you kind of do on a day-to-day, and explain, you know, what the different types of businesses maybe?
Yeah. Before I started all my businesses, I was working in local government. And I was the public information officer for a small water utility. Well, it was actually a large water utility, but and I lost my job after 6 years because I was asked to do something that I felt was unethical, immoral, and borderline illegal, and I refused to do that. And a couple weeks later, I was fired for no reason, terminated with no cause. And that really changed my perspective on things because I won an award every year that I was at that organization, and to be terminated out of nowhere made me realize that there was no loyalty to the employee anymore. And I wanted to be that difference. I wanted to make a difference. And my wife, who has a lot of management experience, she, you know, we were talking about starting a business and I told her, I was like, I'm a writer. I've been published since 2019 and have written just about a book or been published in a book a year since then. And really wanted to do this because I was part of these blogs and these online magazines where people would write, as you know, fiction stories for these magazines and blogs. And there was so much talent out there, but because of these, you know, the lack of funds or the lack of social media following or just the lack of knowledge of the publishing industry, there was a lot of people out there who struggled to get published or to self-publish. So I wanted to be able to help them. And Gracie, my wife, thought it was a brilliant idea, and we banded together with our friends Kelsey Ann Lovelady, Caitlin Kaylor, and Victoria Moxley to start Tea with Coffee Media. And a couple years later, I've been doing marketing communication work for the past decade, and I've done a lot of pro bono work for nonprofits, and decided that I was going to put that to use and start a PR and marketing company that specialized in nonprofits and higher education. And so my day-to-day looks a little bit different every day because I also run two blogs, TylerWitkowski.com which is my I blog about traveling, mental health, marketing, do interviews with creatives from across the internet, and host guest blogs. And also my Adventure with Coffee blog, which is the travel blog for me and my wife's journeys throughout across the United States. We also post a blog about RV tips and tricks and destinations and all kinds of things like that. And then I, on top of all of that, as if that wasn't enough, I also host a podcast called the Cook the Books podcast with my friend and business partner, Kelsey Ann Lovelady, where we interview people from within our organization and talk about the different ways of the publishing process and what they think of Tea with Coffee Media, and, you know, just give them some more light and opportunity to shine on them. And we do it for our staff and our board and our authors. Wow. So I think that covered everything.
Yeah. You sure you don't have another hidden business somewhere?
I've got plenty of hidden businesses in my mind, just none go. That have come to fruition yet.
So what does that look like for someone that, you know, might be wanting to start a business? Like, where do you even get started? What does the process look like, you know, or even the mindset, I guess, if we can start there, of wanting to start your own thing?
The mindset is definitely the biggest thing, because you have to be prepared to struggle, you know, because there are hardly any businesses out there that take off in the first 3 years. They say if you make a profit after the first 3 years, you're going to be successful. And we're shooting for that. We're going in year two next year, and you know, things are looking good. Things are looking on the up and up. So you just have to be willing to struggle for a little bit. And be willing to take some blows across the chin. I've made several mistakes along the way, as you know, both financially and operations and personnel wise. So you have to don't be afraid to make mistakes, because they're going to happen. This is a learning process and a growth process. Definitely reach out for help. That was one thing that, you know, I've got a bachelor's degree in business administration and a MBA in business analytics. So I've got a pretty good, strong foundation understanding of business, but I still wish I would have got some more guidance from, you know, especially in the finance department and things like the formation and the legalities. I wish I would have got a little bit more guidance. So don't be afraid to ask for help, because that's a huge thing. And most of your small business owners are going to help you out, because they understand the struggle and they understand the challenge, and they know that just like them, you're out there to feed your family, and that's the most important thing.
Wow. And you talked about coming into some obstacles and making mistakes. What's something that you've learned, that you maybe a skill that you didn't have that you had to develop to make sure that you were, you know, successful going through this, you know, adventure?
I think the biggest thing is learning the ins and outs of finance, you know, because I was financially illiterate whenever it came to business sense. That was the one class in college that I always struggled with. And I definitely was blindsided by a couple things. I've been hit with some penalties from the state tax department, things like that, just from missing deadlines that I didn't know existed financially, for things like sales and use tax. I've missed taking off some things were on auto pay that I didn't realize we were paying for, and wasn't sure, you know, didn't even know that we were paying for them. So I've definitely learned some financial skills and learned how to monitor better for those kind of mistakes.
Dang. Yeah. If the state wants you, they'll come after you.
Yes. Yes, they will. Money.
I'm sure that's true, you know, any state you go into. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as an author, you know, how did you get started in doing that? Like you said, you've been a writer. You always been a writer, like in school and things like that. Did you, you know, what is it that you love about writing, and, you know, how do you become an author?
My grandmother was an English teacher and later my elementary school principal. And I used to spend a lot of time with her in the school system. My mother was a single mom working, you know, multiple jobs to be able to afford stuff for me and my brother. And my grandparents helped raise me and my brother. And I spent a lot of time in the school system with her. Back then, we didn't have tablets or cell phones or anything like that to play with. So it was either go outside and mingle with the rest of the kids or write and color and draw. And I took the solace and the introvert way and started writing stories for my grandma. And I'd leave them on her desk whenever I went to class. And she used to always love them. And she always encouraged me to write. And all the way up until probably about high school, I loved writing short stories. I took some creative writing classes, but then I just got burnt out from having to write technical papers for like history classes and essays, things like that, that I just didn't enjoy, especially whenever I got to college. And I moved back in with my grandmother in 2019 while me and my wife were waiting on our house to be built. And she asked me one day, she said, "Are you still writing?" And I told her no. I explained to her why. And she asked me to write her something. She just wanted me to write again and she wanted to read it like, we used to do. So I told her I would. I decided to write, a very raw, authentic story about my journey with mental illness. Some things she knew, some things she didn't know, but I wound up giving it to her and she loved it. And I showed it to some of my friends and family, and they were like, "This is amazing. You've got to publish this. This is going to help so many people."
Wow.
So I decided to be vulnerable. I up to that point, I had been very ashamed about my mental illness. I was not one to go out and talk about it. I kept it to myself and a very few select friends, but decided that this was going to be my moment to come out to the world and be who I was and embrace my inner self. And from that moment on, I released the book and people loved it. They would message me on my social media accounts or, people that I knew in real life would tell me in person or text me and they would tell me about how much that story impacted them or how they knew somebody that was mentally ill and how that this made them think of them. And it made me really love writing again because I was making such a difference in people's lives. And later, I published a poetry collection called Coffee, Alcohol, and Heartbreak. I actually wrote those poems between 2012 and 2016 when I was in college, up until my diagnosis. So it kind of goes through the darkest part of my life, through addiction and things like that. So that was a very raw and emotional poetry collection that I wanted to get out into the world so that people could see that. See how I felt and see their feelings in words. I've been in several anthologies, but my next book was the Sunflower Kisses Book One, Seeds of Love, which is about a mentally ill young man who gets into a long distance relationship and it goes through the, battles that they go through with, his issues and, different everyday battles for a young couple. The second book for that, Love and Growth, is actually coming out in 2024. And recently in 2023, I rewrote Not Alone and published it as a full-length novel. I released Enamored Echoes Book One, Potent, which is a retelling of A Midsummer Night's Dream by William Shakespeare, where Oberon, the main character, is schizophrenic. And I've got a book coming out in March of 2024 called The Principal's Principles. It is based on my grandmother. She was the first female principal in the very rural county in the late 80s. So this goes through, it's a fictionalized version of her life, but it goes through some challenges and struggles and adversity that this woman faces. And I wrote it inspired by my grandmother's journey and, her inspiration.
Wow, man, there's so much in there, and we're running a little bit out of time, so I want to be mindful of that and wrap up real quick. Can you plug where people can follow you and find all your work, for one, and then the next thing, we have a lot of 18 to 34-year-olds listening to this right now. What's something, briefly that they can take away from your story and your journey?
Yeah, so let me start with the message first, because that's the most important thing. Just don't ever forget you're not alone. If you ever need somebody, find me. find somebody you can trust. I'm always here to listen. I would rather listen to somebody's problems than have to read about them on the suicide note another day. I want you to know you are valued, you are loved, and despite what your mind may tell you, sometimes you are capable of success, and you will be successful. Like I said, if you ever need me, reach out to me. I'm on social media at Tyler Witkowski on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Threads, and TikTok, and YouTube. So feel free to reach out on me. Reach out to me on any of those platforms. I'm here for you. The best way to get up with me or any of my work, find my websites, my businesses, my blogs, my books, is to visit my Linktree, linktr.ee/Tyler Witkowski.
And that's Witkowski, WITTKOFSKY.
Yes.
And then, man, that got me that message. And it's so powerful. And I think that a lot of people need to hear it, because one thing is there's a lot more people out there than they're willing to acknowledge that are struggling with anxiety, depression, schizophrenia, bipolar, and, you know, we might deal, you know, run into them every day, or they might be our friends or family members. So I think just being mindful of that, if you feel like someone needs help, you know, reach out to them or try to encourage them that, you know, it's okay. And then, you know, let's get you help or something like that, or find you some support or resources that you can get to. But I want to thank you so much, Tyler, for sharing your story and for being on the podcast. And, you know, we were running out of time, but maybe we can do this again and get into a little bit more of, you know, your business and pick your brain a little bit more on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds like a blast. Thanks, Lorenzo.